Hi, this is Dahlia with Just World Books. With so much going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan, we thought it would be a great idea to catch up with Just World Books author Joshua Faust. We published his book, Afghanistan Journal Selections from Registan.net, in November 2010. Joshua is now a fellow at the American Security Project and a correspondent for The Atlantic. He also contributes to PBS Need to Know. I had the chance to speak with Joshua via Skype. Here's our conversation. Hi, Joshua. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. There's a lot been going on in the region probably since 2011, if not longer. In April, we had the U.S. operation that found and killed Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. And then in recent weeks, we've had a number of top officials and assassinations in the Kandahar region of Afghanistan. Can you just sort of give us a region-wide update and your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, I mean, kind of in general, the war in Afghanistan, I think in a lot of ways, has turned into a competition of assassinations. So one of the big hallmarks of General Petraeus's war over the last year has been this dramatic increase in, he calls them decapitation strikes or high-value target missions, HVT missions, to go after leadership within the Taliban and remove them from the battlefield in some way. What's so interesting is while everyone was freaking out about there being some kind of Taliban offensive or some kind of resurgence of violence, that's happened. But the most high-profile way that it has happened, so its most visible component of it, is this wave of assassinations against Afghan officials. And what's interesting about this is they're not targeting U.S. officials or U.S. units even for these major strikes. They're targeting Afghans. And I think that that shift in focus is very important because it's getting at what I think is going to be kind of the permanent dynamic of the war there, which is that the U.S. takes a decreasingly prominent role and the fighting ends up being between two different factions of Afghans battling over the future of their country.
With this increased violence against Afghan officials and with the decrease of the U.S. troops underway, does it seem like this effort to keep the Taliban out and to keep Al-Qaeda out, does it seem like it will be successful?
Well, you know, that's kind of the $100 billion question at this point. You know, one of the foundational ideas of having an American withdrawal over the next, I mean, it's going to be over the next 10 years or so. At the end of 2014, we're still going to have 68,000 troops left in the country. So it's not really a withdrawal. It's just a moderate reduction in the number of troops we have. But that is predicated on the idea of leaving behind a functional and at least vaguely effective in some way Afghan government. And if the Taliban keep up their assassination campaign against the Afghan government, that's going to create a lot of problems because there's already issues with getting enough Afghans to agree to work for the government because it's such a risk, and also because the U.S. and the Afghan government themselves are so bad at protecting people who do sign up. So I think that's demonstrating one of these fundamental weaknesses in the strategy, is that we're not putting in the fundamentals that will actually allow the Afghans to take over their own government.
How would the U.S. go about doing that?
Well, at this point, I mean, to be perfectly honest about it, I think we're too late. The time I'm going about that would be in 2002, and that was when they were creating the Afghan government, when they were laying the foundations of how it would be relating to the international community. They were laying the foundations of the strategy that then took us up to 2009 when it shifted. So, I mean, there's been so much wasted time that at this point, I don't think the U.S. can just pivot and suddenly start caring about Afghan politics again. That ship sailed a long time ago.
Does the Taliban look like it's gaining momentum again?
I mean, I don't like using the word momentum because I don't really know what it means. You know, I mean, the U.S. has momentum, if you want to put it that way, in some places in the South where they've been able to mass several thousand troops. Rajiv Chandrasekaran just wrote a really interesting article about how that's shaping up in some districts of Helmand. And that's actually really important that they've been able to do that. The challenge is that districts in the center part of Helmand have no bearing whatsoever on anything happening anywhere else in the country. I think when you look at places like eastern Afghanistan, specifically the provinces of Khost, Paktia, and Paktika, when you look at places like Nuristan and Kunar, even places closer to Kabul like Ghazni or Wardak, what you see is much, much, much more violence than there was even 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. You also see Taliban moving around much more. You see government officials either not speaking up or being murdered. You see this happening in the north as well. It's become the northern provinces of Afghanistan used to be so safe. You could wander the countryside kind of at random without any protection, flak jacket, weapons, and be pretty much okay. And now there's so much violence, and not all of it is Taliban violence. There's quite a bit of organized criminal violence as well. But the northern provinces are as violent now as southern Afghanistan was in 2006 and 2007. So there's been a real sea change in the nature of violence across the country. But in that sense, you could say the Taliban do have the momentum. But it's not as simple as just saying they have momentum. I mean, it's not like we're dealing with inertia here. It's actually an ongoing struggle requiring continuous input from both sides.
You said it could be more violent than, say, 2 or 3 years ago. But how about in the last six months to a year? Is it more violent than that? Or are we just hearing about the violence more because, you know, more high-profile officials are the ones being assassinated?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question. If you were to talk to General Petraeus, he says violence is down and takes credit for lowering that violence. If you talk to any of the probably half dozen or so civilian agencies, both NGOs and other government and non-government groups that track violence, they all say that it's more violent. And in fact, the UN just released a new violence index showing that it's up something like 15 or 16% over the same period of time last year. So, you know, the military is claiming success and they're claiming that they've reduced violence. And they might have done that in the few areas where they were able to mass 30,000 troops. But nationwide, the country overall is much more violent than it was even last year.
And you're saying in the areas where the U.S. has been able to be present, the violence is down, but otherwise.
Well, and I'd even limit that specifically to a couple of districts in Helmand and Kandahar.
Okay.
Even outside of those, it's still pretty darn violent. And even in areas where there's been a persistent U.S. presence for a long time, again, in provinces like Khost and Paktia, it's still very violent. And in some cases, it's much worse than it ever has been. And, you know, even just looking at violence doesn't really give you a good sense of what's going on. Like Khost City, which is the capital of Khost province, is not a terribly violent place. But part of the reason for that is that the insurgents control so much of the city and the U.S. troops don't challenge it, that there's just not an opportunity for there to be a lot of violence. So even just looking at violence doesn't give you a strong indicator of which side is in control or which side has momentum, if you want to put it in that sense. But, I mean, overall, it's much more violent.
Does the U.S. troop withdrawal, and in conjunction with the assassination of President Karzai's half-brother in the Kandahar region, are there new tensions on the U.S.-Afghan relationship?
I don't know about that. I think the removal of both Petraeus and Eikenberry, so Eikenberry is the ambassador to Kabul, he's been replaced with Ryan Crocker, and then the replacement of General Petraeus with General Allen, who's a Marine Corps general, I think that's actually doing a lot to diffuse a lot of the tension that had been existing between the Afghan government and the U.S. Over the last, especially 6 months, but last year in general, one of the hallmarks of Petraeus's command there has actually been a really alarming tone deafness about how his statements and actions would be perceived by Afghans. Similarly, General Eikenberry, ever since his memo expressing no confidence in President Karzai got leaked to the Washington Post in 2009, he's been completely ineffective, and I'd actually say pretty counterproductive in terms of representing U.S. interests there. So having an entirely new senior-level team inside Afghanistan, just because they are not, by definition, as bad as the previous two people were, there's been, at least from what we've been able to tell on the outside, a pretty substantial reduction in tension since that happened.
Could there be a positive relationship as a result, or is that a little too ambitious?
Well, I mean, again, it kind of depends on how you define positive. I think positive in the sense of they won't get into shouting matches with each other all the time. Yes, positive in the sense of they'd sit down and draw plans together the way Karzai and like Zalmay Khalilzad did in 2003, 2004, you probably won't see that as much because, again, we've kind of crossed the Rubicon in terms of being able to play a really constructive role in Afghanistan's political development. And I think at this point in time, and especially where things seem to be heading, we just don't have much of an opportunity to really get involved in a constructive way.
And should we get involved in a constructive way at this point or at any point?
Well, I mean, at any point, you know, in 2002, especially dealing with things like the Bonn Conference that ended up creating the current government, there was a real opportunity to engage with Afghanistan in a political sense, and we didn't take that opportunity. And even since then, a lot of the issues, and I think a lot of the ways the insurgency in particular has evolved, have been the result of us choosing to not view Afghanistan in a political way. When I was there a couple of years ago, I was most surprised in the province I was in Kapisa province, that the insurgency wasn't really about Islam. It even wasn't really about ethnicity. What it really came down to was certain political factions were empowered and put in charge of government agencies, and other political factions were excluded from access to those government agencies. And those were the lines that you saw the insurgent loyalties being drawn. So it was very explicitly political, but the way that the Americans, and in that province, this was Kapisa province, and it was right after the French took over primary jurisdiction there. Even among the French, you didn't see a lot of awareness and understanding of the political context of the people they were dealing with and then the decisions they were making. And as a result of that, if you're dealing with a political situation but not actually engaging with the politics, then you're going to lose. And I think we've spent so much time losing in that sense that we just don't have an opportunity to get it back.
Would you say that we've lost? That's it? We've lost?
We've lost the original goal of creating this happy, magic place. In terms of the way President Obama has defined the war, I don't think we've lost yet. We still have a chance to leave behind a government that will not allow al-Qaeda to return. And even if they remain at war with the Taliban, so long as al-Qaeda doesn't use the territory of Afghanistan to launch any attacks, then yeah, we've won. As far as President Obama's definition goes, which is in terms of preventing al-Qaeda from returning, preventing Afghanistan from being used to launch attacks, I think that's very achievable still. And we actually have a good likelihood of leaving behind an Afghanistan that will not welcome al-Qaeda in the future.
Speaking of al-Qaeda and it being welcome, we're going to shift focus to the U.S. relationships with Pakistan.
Okay.
Since Osama bin Laden was found in Pakistan next to a military compound, what does that mean for the relationship between the U.S. and Pakistan?
That's actually been hugely detrimental to the bilateral relationship. I think the recent decision to suspend $800 million in aid is at least in part a reaction to that. In that it wasn't just that Osama bin Laden happened to be in Pakistani territory hiding out somewhere. It was that he was living pretty openly in a large house that seemed to be kind of an open secret that he was there all along. So when American policymakers look at the at least apparent or seeming complicity that the Pakistani government had, if nothing else, not that they knew that Osama bin Laden was there, but that they just assumed that someone from al-Qaeda or a senior member from the Taliban was living there and chose not to do anything about it, I think that's been hugely, hugely damaging.
Well, al-Qaeda's presence in Pakistan is unquestionable in some way, shape, or form. So would cutting off ties with the country be an option even for the U.S.?
I mean, I think it needs to be on the table. There's a lot of resistance to doing that within the U.S. government, but one of the big Achilles heels that we have in dealing with Pakistan is that we are utterly reliant on them for sending supplies into Afghanistan. So in a lot of ways, the war in Afghanistan prevents us from dealing with Pakistan's ties to terrorism in an effective way, because Pakistan always has that trump card of holding our supply lines over our head. As the war in Afghanistan winds down, though, what we will see is much more flexibility to apply pressure on the Pakistanis to go after terrorists. And I think that's where we might actually be able to see some real movement on that front in the future.
Well, that sounds a little more hopeful than what we've been hearing lately.
It does. And, you know, the region isn't entirely without hope. And, you know, this is something that I talk about in my book, in Afghanistan Journal, is that it's not just the fact that we're there that makes this hard or impossible. And it's not even the objective facts of the war there that makes it hard or impossible. It's the fact that there hasn't been a lot of creative or innovative thinking about how to make it achievable and about how to achieve the tasks that we've set for ourselves that really gets in our way.
So what would you suggest? If in terms of innovative and creative.
Well, I mean, at this point, I've been away from kind of the inside decision making to have much insight into what the plans are going forward. But I think primarily the two big focuses that we need to have are weaning Pakistan off of its reliance or bizarre dysfunctional relationship with Islamic militants in some way, but then also teaming up with the Afghan government in a political way. So again, getting back to the issue of politics, looking at how and why people are organizing opposition to the government, there's a lot of exaggeration about the motivations people have for joining the insurgency. And I think by looking at it in a political way, instead of looking at it in a religious way or in a militant way, but specifically the politics of why people join the insurgency, that starts opening up whole new venues for ways to incorporate them into the political process in a way that will actually kind of defang the militancy. On the Pakistani side, when you begin defanging the militancy in Afghanistan, thus reducing the need to keep Pakistan as a transit corridor, then you have much more aid to hold essentially hostage to make Pakistan either comply with something that we want, or it also then opens up the opportunity of cutting them off completely. And one of the big stumbling blocks I have with the whole relationship we have with Pakistan is that over the last 10 years, Pakistan has done much more to destabilize global security than Iran has. They've sponsored more terrorism. They have proliferated more nuclear weapons. They have killed far more American citizens than Iran ever has. But we maintain this constructive, somehow dysfunctional relationship with them while we designate Iran a complete international pariah. I think the difference between those two countries is that we need Pakistan to get into Afghanistan. If we don't have that need anymore, then we have a whole nother realm of options to either pressure them or in some way punish them for being such bad actors.
Well, it looks like our foreign policy certainly will be reshaped, you know, come 2014 at least.
Absolutely.
If not sooner than that.
It might be reshaped come 2012. It really depends on how I think the American presidential election plays out. There's an opportunity, especially if the GOP stays insistent that the war in Afghanistan is too expensive to justify. I think that would prompt a lot of thinking about how the war can be changed. But, you know, that's going to come down the line, and it's really going to determine who the candidate in the primaries ends up being.
We'll have to talk to you some more then and sort of see who we end up with as far as who the candidates are and then see where foreign policy might go. But hopefully we'll talk to you sooner than that.
I'd like that as well.
Well, thank you so much for taking out the time to speak with me today, Joshua.
Sure thing.
To read more of his insight, Joshua's book, Afghanistan Journal Selections from Registan.net, is available on our website, www.justworldbooks.com. You can find it there in paperback or for the Kindle. Thanks for listening.